Well, we might as well just get into it. I'm Dave Murphy at the Daily News, joined by Rich Hoffman, columnist and all-around good guy. This is the first ever Sports Week Daily News podcast. We'll be here for about an hour talking mostly Phillies and Eagles. We're going to break everything down offseason-wise, the one that was for the Phillies and the one that shall be for the Eagles. We will be joined by Wes Bunting, who is the college scouting coordinator for the National Football Post. He is down in Mobile, Alabama, and he will fill us in on just about every name that you need to know from an Eagles perspective moving forward. The Senior Bowl practices begin this week. Game is on Saturday. Really the first big event of the football offseason. Rich Hoffman loves the NFL draft, does he not?
Can't spell Mobile.
Most people in Mobile can't spell Mobile either, but I am a self-admitted NFL draft Nick. You are the, what is the opposite of a draft
Antithesis.
Nick?
Antithesis.
What is the opposite of a
what
draft Nick?
Somebody who watches the games.
No. Do you watch the Senior Bowl?
Do I watch the Senior Bowl? Not if I can help it.
No. Yeah, so Rich will bring his vast knowledge and enthusiasm for the NFL draft to this podcast, but that's why we're bringing Wes Bunting, and we will also talk with Wes Bowen, Eagles beat writer for the Daily News. He's also down in Mobile, Alabama. We will get some restaurant reviews from Wes. Curious about the local cuisine down there. Most importantly, we will talk Eagles draft, and we will also talk Phillies offseason. These two teams are kind of at, I don't want to say the same junctures in their trajectory, but both coming off disappointing seasons. Phillies, I can't believe 2 weeks from now I'm going to be in Clearwater, Florida. Everyone says I'm lucky. I feel the opposite, but Florida's not exactly a hotbed of culture. Let's put it that way. But
as opposed to Mobile,
yes, yes, right. We're getting the tour of red states here on the first podcast. But anyway, I'm going to start it off by asking you a question that I was actually thinking a lot on my way down here, in the rain. Which team had a more disappointing season, in your point of view, the Phillies or the Eagles? And well, I'll let you answer. But I mean, obviously, the Eagles jump out at you because they were 8-8. But what do you think?
You start with the idea that there's no denying that they were both disappointing. I have to say the Eagles was more disappointing overall. I did not expect them to be a Super Bowl team. I don't think anybody with eyes really thought they were going to be a Super Bowl team.
What did you predict? What record did you predict?
I predicted, and I'm trying to remember, either 10 or 11 wins. I thought they'd win the division. I thought they would win one playoff game tops, and that was it. And they just had too many holes. And I thought that was obvious to everybody. Now, 8 is way short of 11, and there's, you know, there's a clear disappointment there, and Andy is clearly on the clock, and there's no doubt about that. And so because of that, you have to say, I think the Eagles deal is worse. But you can't deny the Phillies thing right now. They're in a league where you can spend as much money as you want.
Well, exactly.
And they have assembled the pitching staff of all time, or the starting pitching staff of all time, and they didn't get out of the, you know, out of St. Louis.
I mean, frankly, that's why I decided. I really think the Phillies, well, I think the Eagles underperformed more than the Phillies did because, let's face it, they won 103
right.
games, won a division, you know, really treated this city to a great season. And in baseball, you know, more than football, I think that's what the entertainment factor is the big thing because you're paying to see this team for 81 games at home. And
yeah, there's nothing worse than a lousy team
right.
in August.
Exactly. Whereas the Eagles, you know, in the NFL, it's more about the ultimate prize. But look, let's face it. The Phillies controlled their own destiny more than the Eagles did because they did not have a salary cap. And when you have the second largest payroll in the league, and that payroll dwarfs the majority of the teams that you're competing against, really anything short of your payroll standing in the ultimate standings is a disappointment. And look, the NFL is set up for teams to go 8-8, and that's
right.
what the Eagles did. You know, and yeah, free agency is kind of this illusion that you can control your own destiny from year to year, but really it's all about the draft. I don't know that, I mean, what's the last big spending team in free agency in the NFL that went on to do anything?
Yeah, I'm
I mean, the Redskins were pretty much it for every year.
Right,
you know?
No, I mean,
I don't think the Eagles were wrong in how they approached it, really. I mean, it was kind of a unique summer, and they had, you know, they oddly had a lot of money. There oddly were a lot of guys available for cheap. I don't think it was a personality thing. I don't think it was a chemistry thing. I think it was mostly a quarterback throwing too many interceptions thing.
Or a running back throwing too many fumbles.
it's simplistic. I think next year is so much about Vic that the rest of it is conversation.
And we're actually going to talk less about that in a few minutes. He wrote a story today, a blog post last week, about Eagles potentially looking quarterback on the first day of the draft. And frankly, I don't know what the feeling about Mike Kafka is in the organization. We'll ask less that. But he doesn't strike me as a quarterback of the future type. He strikes me more as a Coy Detmer, solid backup type, but we'll find out. Maybe I'm wrong. I think it would be a mistake not to at least entertain the notion of drafting a quarterback, not in the first round. But what if a guy like Ryan Tannehill from, Texas A&M falls to you in the second round? You have a couple second round picks. Do you use one of them on a quarterback?
It paints what is organizationally a very funny time for them.
Yeah.
Because they are with Andy. It's all now, now, now.
Yep.
But organizationally, they have always been about later, later, later. And
let me ask you this. Who has let's say it gets to that point, and they're in the second round, and there's a guy there that Andy likes that he thinks that can help him retain his job next year, or there's a quarterback that the scouting folks love, and Andy says, we need the guy that's going to help us win next year, and the scouting guys say, we love this guy. This guy, Kevin, the way they loved Kevin Cobb. Who wins?
I think the scouting guy. I think my guess is their approach will be they will give Andy whatever he wants in free agency to the point of mortgaging something
right.
if they have to, but mm-hmm. they're running the draft. And I think that's the way it's going to go.
Yeah, so it's going to be fascinating. And that there's going to be a lot of – there are going to be several picks in this draft, I think, where that comes into play. I think first round pretty clearly I would be shocked if they don't go linebacker at number 15 unless
– How long have you lived here?
Yeah. I should restate that. I probably wouldn't. The sad thing is, I would not be shocked if they did not go linebacker at number 15.
But I think
the future and the present are the same in the first round. They need the linebacker, don't they?
You tell me if the 11 game sample at the end of the season is meaningful or not. Is it meaningless? Is it a little meaningful?
Are you saying
they were sixth in the league against the run for the last 11 games? No, is that? They didn't play a lot of high-powered offenses, but I mean they played teams.
I just think when you have two seventh-round picks starting your linebacking core, you're not doing something right.
But by the end of the season, what they did was they turned them all into situational guys,
which is great. But they need a guy. They haven't had that guy.
I don't disagree with
right.
you. But if you are, I think if there's a quarterback they like, that's the way they're going. That would be my
guess. In the first round.
I would.
Yeah. Wow.
I think Andy, if you're Andy, and you put a gun to his head, and you ask him, what do you want more than anything else? I think he might say a big receiver.
I love Justin Blackmon,
but I'm not a kid. I'm. He needs an. I think he needs another.
When you say big, you mean physically big?
I think he needs a phys. I mean, I
like a Marcus Colston, Dwayne Bowe type.
I think they need to be better in the red zone.
I agree.
And I think
and on third down.
They need to I like Deshaun, I like him more than you do.
I think
he offers them a lot in certain games, but not so much in others. And they kind of need a plan B, and they need I think a red zone big make Vic. I mean, this is all about Vic.
And
if Vic goes in there and says, "Get me a big guy," I'd go get him a big guy. And that's it.
And I think that's been the one lesson of this offseason, I mean, of this postseason in the NFL, I think. Look at the guys that have dominated this postseason. Gronkowski, Vernon Davis, big physical guys that you can, when your quarterback needs to make a throw, who was Vic's big target in Atlanta all those years?
All right, but
Algie Crumpler.
Okay, but Cruz, Eli got the heck beat out of him.
And he did.
And he still found the wideouts all day yesterday.
Right. So, they also have great wideouts.
Well, but Victor Cruz was a guy we made fun of. in about week, you know, five of this season.
You did, because you love DeSean Jackson. No, I didn't make five. I looked at him and said,
you know what? I'd go back on Twitter and look up Victor Cruz and high cheese, and we'll see what you had to say about that.
But let's be honest. You're right. You're absolutely right. We thought he was a fluke. We thought the Eagles made Victor Cruz. But right now, would you take DeSean Jackson or Victor Cruz?
I'd take Victor Cruz in 2011.
Yeah. But the thing they need is a guy who's going to make the play over the middle, which is what Victor Cruz did a lot yesterday.
He got beat up bad, and he came back. And
can Macklin be that guy?
Can he be that guy? He had a quietly not too good year, I thought.
He was
his
hurt.
Numbers are I know he was and his numbers are not horrible, but he just I thought he was going to be a little better, and he needs to be a little better.
Yeah.
And like I said, I bet you Andy, that's what he wants.
I agree, and that's actually, I made a list before we came on air of needs, obviously linebacker number one, safety number two, mm-hmm. but I think if not, they need a possession receiver, whether it's a tight end or a possession receiver.
Right.
And Blackman is a guy who I think can do A.J. Green type things in his rookie year, but he's not going to be there. They're not going right. to trade up to Blackman, the kid from Oklahoma State. Tight end. JerMichael Finley's a free agent, but the Packers are going to franchise him. There's, right. You're not going to get a marquee tight end on the free agent market.
Selleck is a productive guy.
He's a system guy. I think that's the big problem with their personnel. They're all system guys. Andy is a great schemer. He's a great coordinator, and he puts his players in position to make plays, as he, you know, always reminds us in his press conference. But he's a guy. He's like a system guy. Jacob Tammy. When Dallas Clark gets hurt, Jacob Tammy steps into the Colts offense with Peyton Manning under quarterback and still makes plays. That's a system guy. Selleck is a guy who can make plays in the system, but he's not a physically dominant player. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does. But I think...
I mean, like, that's the Colts system. They have system wide receivers. Pierre Garçon, he's not a great wide receiver, but he fits that system. Whereas a guy like Marcus Colston, a guy like Dwayne Bowl, those are a guy like Vernon Davis. Those are raw, physical athletes who I think the Eagles do not have to make plays over the middle.
Right, but I would agree with that. But as long as you have DeSean, who, whatever you say about him, does get more attention than the other guys.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah, Macklin is a guy people have to cover honestly.
Yeah.
And seriously. As long as that and as long as that's true, and as long as the running back is still healthy and in one piece.
Right.
The second thing I want a real backup for him.
Ding, ding, ding. Man, we are on the same page.
But
let's get back, before we get too off track, let's get back to the original question. We were talking Phillies Eagles.
Right.
I think we're kind of on the same page with where the Eagles need to go in the offseason. I think we're going to be on different
I'm not linebacker. Well, but anyway, go ahead.
But regardless, I think they need a short yardage back, mm-hmm. Which Ronnie Brown, that to me is, all right, we'll get into that
all
later.
Right.
But I think we're going to differ on our views of the Phillies offseason. Do you think they took the steps they needed to take to be that team that beats the Cardinals and gets back to the World Series?
The question is, in my mind with the Phillies, I don't think you can change them in a fundamental way. I don't think that was a way to approach things. I think what you want to do
is
Chase Utley. Ryan Howard is Ryan Howard. I mean, Jimmy Rollins should have been re-signed. He was the best thing available.
Yes.
That was a good move. I mean, the Shane Victorino is Shane Victorino. The core guys are the core guys. They're either going to prove that they're not didn't get old overnight, or they're not going to prove it.
Right.
So to me, there wasn't a lot to do except to do stuff on the edges and make it look a little different. Papelbon for Madsen, fine. I mean, I you can make an argument probably either way, frankly. And again, it's not my money. Tomy gives you, you know, he's not going to get as many hits as Ross Glode, but he might hit him a little farther. I have my severe doubts about that one. I mean, I'm not sure he's set.
Maybe
for
we
it.
Are on the same page.
I'm not sure he's set for it temperamentally.
He really struggled with it when he was with the Dodgers.
Yeah, he talked about that. I mean, I talked to him last week, and he. You know, he talked about the whole idea of playing any defense. He said, look, I'm going to try. But it's been a long time, and I'm going to be totally honest with you, the game's gotten faster. All right? And so that's
And
not,
he's gotten slower.
Yeah. That's fast is a relative term.
Right.
So
It's like my grandfather keeps telling me I keep getting taller, but I keep telling him, Grandpa, you're shrinking, bud. You know, I haven't grown in a while.
So I don't, so the bench will look a little different. Ty Wigginton, he's got a longer track record than Ben Francisco. You know, he's probably a marginally better hitter. Mm-hmm. That's probably a little bit of an upgrade, but I mean, no, not a big deal kind of a thing. Left field is, Raul, on the even number months when Raul was good, or was it the odd number months? I forget.
I really don't know.
They're probably not going to be as
Raul's
good.
Raul's biological clock was all messed
up. Well, but when he was when his biorhythms were right, they were better in left field than they will be this year. Let's approach it this way
Before we check in with Wes down in Mobile, hostile, agile. Wes is none of the above. Although he might argue he's agile. Let's go position by position. You started at Tommy over Glode. Yeah, upgrade or no?
What's our metric?
Wins.
Wins more games as a result of his being there. Might be Glode.
See, I'm going to say it's... As much as I did not understand the Tommy signing and thought that $1.25 million could have been used somewhere else, I think in pure wins, he probably is an upgrade, just assuming he stays healthy. Now, that's the other big question. Tommy's a guy who struggled with back problems, right, the last four or five years.
He's doing yoga now.
Yeah. Oh, okay. God. When is someone going to write a story on athletes doing yoga? That's... Anyway, Eddie George, I think, started that. For some reason, I remember reading a Sports Illustrated article about Eddie George doing yoga, and then it's like it must be in the agent handbook for rebounding from a disappointing season is
yoga.
Yoga is the answer to everything. But look, Glode last year just did not help them at all, just because of that hip.
Got a lot of hits, though.
He got a few hits, but once he got on base, he had to pinch run for him. Couldn't play defense.
And Tommy's not clogging up the bases.
Yeah, well, that's right. But I think Tommy. Tommy makes opposing pitchers think a little bit more than Glode. I think he makes opposing managers think a little bit more. We're talking about the left-handed,
right?
You know,
correct.
Like, come on. If anything, breaking even. I'm not gonna
right.
bust them one
Fine.
Way or the other.
Okay.
You know.
It'll look a little different though.
Yeah. All right. I would err on Tommy. You would err on the side of Glode. Backup catcher, Brian Schneider. I mean, again, we're talking about backup
right.
catcher. Wigginton, I don't know. I really don't. Wigginton or Francisco. I mean, Wigginton is a guy who 2 years ago, 3 years ago, could really give you some productive stretches at the plate at least. It all depends on how much he has
right.
left.
But just based on his numbers last year, he's
yeah.
He's
I was at a big breath. I was
a
about
tiny
a,
bit better. I mean, again, it's
he's a little more versatile.
Is he worth the money?
Yeah, I think he is.
It'll be different. It'll look different.
All right, so we'll say a little bit of an upgrade there.
Right.
Left field to me is now again. I don't think you can feel too strongly one way or another on the Phillies offseason
right.
just because they really didn't have many options. You know, Rollins was clearly the only
right.
way to upgrade. You said it. Rollins was the clear answer at shortstop. You could make an argument that they should have played for Jose Reyes, but I just don't. The one big credit you have to give to Ruben Amaro Jr. and Pat Gillick before him is, and Charlie I think has a lot to do with this, is that they've created a clubhouse chemistry that is lacking in some environments.
Yeah, I mean that would have been if they had gone the Reyes way, that would have been very meaningful.
Right.
I mean it would have really been an eye onto their souls and about how desperate they were.
Yeah.
Because great talent, but unlike personality-wise,
right.
a lot of what they got going on right now.
Yeah,
so.
Absolutely. So anyway, shortstop, you're even.
Right.
Left field, John Mayberry Jr., do you believe?
Yeah. What I believe is if they are going to be what they think they are, they've got to be able to work, and he's not that young, but they've got to be able to work younger players
right.
into this thing. I mean, they got to find, in my mind, now I don't know where you are on Don Brown these days. I want him on that team.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I.
Yeah, we're gonna get into that later. He's on my list of guys to look out for because
right.
I think there's a very good chance that he plays a big role in the 2012 season.
I mean, but there's a lot of elements to building something and sustaining it, and I think turnover with, again, he's not that young, but yeah, I mean, I think it's time. I mean, if your lineup cannot accommodate a guy like him.
Like Mayberry?
Yeah. Then what are we talking about?
We're talking about a guy who had about a.
I mean, he's, I don't
see. So he had a sub 800 OPS in it. In his minor league career.
Right, until he came back, I mean, you know.
200 at bats. He had 300 at bats last year.
I know, but if he's terrible, then they're going to have a big issue. But if he hits 260 and plays a decent left field, they have to be able to accommodate.
I mean,
accommodate something?
Absolutely.
Like this,
they can accommodate it. My question is he going to be that guy on a regular basis? Right. I mean, Charlie, but what people don't realize, I think, is that Charlie did a magnificent job with him last year, picking spots to play him in. Charlie, for all the faults you want to ascribe to him, I think a lot of them are overplayed, but he knows his players as well as any manager in the league, and he knows their strengths, and he knows their weaknesses, and he has his finger on the pulse of their psychology better than most managers. And he did a great job of finding pitchers that John Mayberry Jr. could excel against. I'm curious to see if he can do that on a regular basis. I don't want to. I can't say one way or the other. I think he can't. I don't think they can be worse in left field than they were last year. Because we're all really.
I mean, he just, you know.
You can't have a guy who gets on base less than 30% of the time in your lineup.
No, yeah. But I mean, and I have to believe that Mayberry will be a more consistent presence, whatever that is. Now, I mean, maybe he will not be able to hit the heights that Raul did on those in a 26-week season, 5 weeks of the year. But I gotta think 20 weeks of the year, he will be a more consistent player. And again, that I mean, it's a lineup that cries for just consistent production. And I do think he can give it to you. I think Mayberry's okay.
Well, one guy who loves baseball, if you follow him on Twitter, is Les Bowen. And we're going to head down to Mobile right now. Mobile! And talk to Les, who's down at the Senior Bowl. Les, are you there?
I am indeed, Dave.
Awesome. What's the weather like in Mobile right now?
It's very Florida-like. You would recognize it from spring training. In fact, we're not that far from the panhandle of Florida, actually. But it rains like hell for 15 minutes, and just when you think you're going to drown, the sun comes out. And you think, oh, well, good, that's over with. And then another half hour, it's raining again.
Sounds like a beautiful place.
Well, you know, it's not bad, but...
Is it better than 40...
At a bad time of year.
Is it better than 40 degrees in the overcast?
Yeah, it's warm. It's just warm and wet.
Well, let me ask you this. We were just talking about the Phillies, and I know you're a baseball guy. And the question I asked Rich was, which team do you think had a more disappointing season, Phillies or Eagles? And I'm curious to get an Eagles guy's perspective on that.
Boy, that's a great question. I mean, they're both huge disappointments, I think. If you want to say, not many people in the Philadelphia area really expected the Eagles to win the Super Bowl, whereas a lot of people expected the Phillies to get to or win the World Series. I think that would indicate maybe the Phillies, but didn't have the added rub-it-in factor of a team like the Giants. Well, maybe it did with the Cardinals, but they weren't that. They're not like a hated rival of the Phillies so much.
What do you think the reaction was at one Nova Care yesterday?
Yeah, that's something I'm hoping to. That's always one of my main focuses here at the Senior Bowl, because we don't get to talk to the Eagles people that much in the off season. I'm going to go to the South practice today because that's where Howie Roseman is going to be. Andy Reid is not down here, and I want to. That's one of my first questions is, you know, what do you make of the Giants' five-game win streak into the Super Bowl? The Giants, it's really funny. I think the Eagles consider themselves probably the dominant team in the NFC East in the Andy Reid era. They've won more division titles than anybody else in that time. But now the Giants have been to three Super Bowls in the Andy Reid era. Now, one of them was, you know, with Kerry Collins and a different coach and different players. But nonetheless, it just seems like the Giants seem to stumble into the Super Bowl almost casually every few years out of nowhere. And the Eagles, it's quite different for them.
Would it be akin to the Mets going to the World Series last year?
Yeah, kind of, yeah. I think so, yeah.
As long as you set aside the complete
But the thing is, I was talking to some people about this a little while ago. The thing about the Giants is, as much as Eagles fans like to make fun of Eli Manning, and he has had some bad performances against the Eagles, one just a couple months ago, but Eli Manning is a franchise quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, right now he might be the only franchise quarterback in the NFC East. With the year that Michael Vick had, I don't know if you can rank him in that category or not. So I think that's the basis of the Giants' success. I mean, there are a lot of other reasons, but you start with that. You always start with that. And, you know, they won yesterday, I think. Obviously, they won because the 49ers' backup punt returner, you know, lost his mind. But they also won because they had a franchise quarterback, and the 49ers certainly did not.
Yeah, a franchise quarterback who got hit 20 times and he got sacked like 6 times and still kept him in the game. I mean, to me,
absolutely, yeah.
And that's, now compare that to Michael Vick, and which is going to,
right.
The question, I guess, is on draft day, if the Eagles go take a quarterback with one of their first 3 picks, is that a referendum on Michael Vick's future, or is it an indication of how worried they are? Or is it just what the prudent thing is to do when you got a quarterback Michael Vick's age?
Oh, I think there's an excellent chance they will. That's one of the things I'm down here to look at is the quarterbacks that are here. You know, given that they have those 2 second-round picks, I think that sets up really nicely for them to take the quarterback.
But is it because they're worried about Vick long-term, or is it just because it is what the smart team does at this point in Vick's life cycle?
I think it's impossible to say which it is. I mean, it's very convenient for them almost that Vick is turning 32 because I think, you know, you do have to do that. Even if you're not worried about, you know, whether he's really the guy or not, you did it with McNabb,
yep.
You know, a year sooner than this, and you need to... It's pretty clear that they don't consider Kafka, you know, the next guy, even though they talk him up. You saw how Vince Young played, and they didn't play Kafka. I think there's an excellent chance you draft a quarterback pretty high this year, and, you know, you see how next season works out and kind of go from there.
Yeah, the Vic contract, structure-wise at least, gives them – some flexibility over the next couple seasons. I think 2 years is the big.
Right.
After
the second year, there'll still be some dead money, but it's not nearly as bad. But basically, 2 years, they're really wed to him, and this will be the second year of the 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, the cap thing is very manageable, I mean, after this year. Because the signing bonus just wasn't very big.
Right.
They wanted to do small signing bonus, big salaries, because it lets them, it gives them an out, and frankly gives them an out
right.
when Andy's contract is up. Which brings us to the big issue of the year. Is Andy's not there. Is Juan Castillo there?
He is. I have not seen him yet, but I know that he is, yes.
Is he wearing Eagles gear?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. I think Rich certainly seems that Juan Castillo will be back as defensive coordinator.
So he is watching defensive players and not offensive linemen?
Yeah, not well. They haven't done anything.
Yeah, it was just the weigh-in today, correct?
This morning, but it sure seems to me Andy Reid would have had his wrap-up press conference that everybody's been waiting for, and wouldn't be so assiduously dodging us if he had the whole staff thing figured out. I think there is something yet to come. I don't know if it will be something like over one or a position coach that will have a lot of influence on Juan. I think it's somebody that's been involved in the playoffs. You know, maybe they're free now. I don't know. It wouldn't be somebody from the Giants. So, you know, if they're not free, it's got to be either the Giants or the Patriots. The likelihood is that it isn't either of those teams. there's somebody that they've been waiting to talk to. That's the only explanation I can.
What kind of position are we talking, do you think?
Well, they have an opening for a corners defensive backs coach.
But anybody who's already employed somewhere else, you can't even talk to them. I mean,
But you're offering them some sort of title, like, you know, Grand Exalted Imperial Wizard Assistant Offensive Coordinator, you know, Assistant Defensive Coordinator and Corners Coach, you know, something like that. Then you could talk to them. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, that's speculation, but I just think that's the only there's a shoe left to drop here, and it can't be that they're just sort of sitting there dithering, I don't think. They're talking to somebody that they can't get yet. But I don't think it's going to be to replace Juan at this point. It just doesn't seem likely, you know.
How big would it be in your mind if Marty Morningweg left? He's been, you know, he's interviewed with the Raiders, apparently. Nobody knows what's going on in Indianapolis. If he were to leave, do you think Andy would have to call the plays again? Or how do you think that would go?
I think they would move right back to Brad Childress. Now, whether that would involve Andy calling plays or not, I don't believe Brad called plays very much when he was here the first time. I think it would be a bad thing for the Eagles. I may be in the minority on that. I get a lot of tweets and emails from people, you know, good riddance, hope somebody takes that bum off our hands. I don't feel that way at all. I think he has his weaknesses, and unfortunately they kind of mirror Andy's weaknesses. But Marty's a smart, innovative strategist, and he's done a lot with Michael Vick. He's done a lot with a lot of guys on that offense, and I think it's a loss for them if he leaves. But frankly, I know his interview in Oakland supposedly went very well. I don't think there's been a hint out of Indianapolis other than us, you know, speculating that he would be a candidate there. I don't think they've asked to talk to him. I know they haven't talked to him. So it's really just Oakland. But, you know, I mean, apparently it went well. I'm a little surprised because as much as I respect Marty, I don't think he's a typical head coaching personality. I think he's kind of you just don't get that. You know, you want a guy kind of like the Harbaughs, who's a hard-charging, force of nature kind of guy. If you can get that kind of guy. And Marty's personality is a little more, you know, I don't know what you would call it, F-scroost or something like that. Yeah, he's just kind of. He kind of wanders off on tangents, and he doesn't project as the face of your franchise. But maybe that's not what, you know, every head coach isn't the face of the franchise in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean,
especially been the case in Oakland over the years.
Well, since we're on coaching, here's a question that I've mulled over the past couple of weeks. Just. When you hear some of the names of coaching candidates that these teams are wading into, the Marty Schottenheimers, the Mike Shermans, I mean, for goodness sake, you know, Jeff Fisher is the golden child, and if you're the Eagles, what kind of PR stunt is that if you fire a coach who has not won a Super Bowl to bring in a coach whose legacy is that he never won a Super Bowl? So let me ask you this. I have been a vocal critic of Andy Reid's, but is it hard to make the case that the Eagles should have parted ways with him as head coach now that you look at the types of guys who are or are not available to fill such a void?
I think that might have been a factor in not pulling the trigger, Dave. I really do. I don't think they had, you know, this is a situation where you have a competitive team. You're not starting from, you know, 1-15 or something like that. I don't think they wanted to fire Andy and then say, okay, what are we going to do now? You know, these are guys that like to have a plan, and I do not think they had one. I also think there are two ways to look at Andy Reid right now, real quickly. One is you made a lot of decisions last offseason, like Howard Mudd and Jim Washburn and Jason Babin and, you know, even the Michael Vick contract, that were kind of predicated on having Andy Reid around for two seasons, including 2011. So there's a rationale for keeping him for 2012. But the other way of looking at him is, and I go back and forth on this all the time, the other way of looking at him, can you really look anybody in the eye right now, if you're the Eagles management, and say, yes, we're going to win a Super Bowl with Andy Reid? Now, my answer would be, I can't. I mean, and if that's, you know, if that's the bottom line, then why not just get on with it, you know?
I think Rich disagrees with you.
Think Andy's going to
win a Super Bowl?
I think if they're going to win a Super Bowl this year, it's with Andy and Marty, and Vic playing like the MVP. And I don't see a new guy coming in, and turning Vic into the, and bringing in a new offense and turning Vic into the MVP.
I think you're right. I think for 2012, their most competitive team is with Andy Reid.
And
are they going to win the Super Bowl? They'll give them a puncher's chance, maybe.
Yeah, I think they would be. I think they're likely to be a playoff team. And I think if Vic can take the turnovers out of his game again, I think they got a shot to be pretty exciting for that X number of weeks. Now. X has got to be late, though.
Out of the game again, they'll be one of the best teams in football. But I just don't have an explanation for that brief golden period when Vic wasn't turning the ball over in 2010. I think there's been no indication that that's really who he is. I went through this time and time again and wrote it time and time again. You know, if you found him today and talked to him, he would still, if you got deep enough into it, he would still tell you that turnovers are part of the game and, you know, you have to make something happen out there and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, he doesn't get it. I'm pretty sure.
And I don't know that it's – I think in the NFL today, the Eagles are the type of team with enough talent to go on a run. What I don't think, and where I agree with you, is that, you know, Vic and Andy – look – football is a possession game, and you cannot afford to give away possessions and expect to win. And that, more than anything, is what Tom Coughlin has succeeded at during his tenure as head coach of the Giants. He always has three timeouts left. He never gives a possession away. And frankly, Eli has been very good at managing his turnovers in the postseason runs that they have had. And Andy just seems to treat possessions as if they're these superfluous things that you can afford to give away every now and then. And you can't do that in the playoffs, can you? And do you agree with that?
No, I don't think so. I really don't. You know, it's with Andy, the burning the timeouts is the biggest thing. I think he sees turnovers as
yeah. I'm saying Vic's attitude to turnovers is kind of Reed's attitude towards game management and timeout management.
Yeah. Okay. I never thought of it that way, but you could be right.
Defensively, do you think, I mean, there's an argument to be made, and I guess it's probably being made internally right now, that one of the bigger issues last year was a lack of stability, and that if they're going to make a mistake this year, it will be to err on the side of stability. Is that crazy? On defense?
No, I guess not. Yeah, I said what I had to say about Juan in a blog post the other day. It's, you can make all the arguments that, you know, the defense was better down the stretch. It certainly is true. Yes, they were playing bad quarterbacks, but they got their butt kicked by bad quarterbacks just a few weeks earlier. You know, I see the benefits of stability. I still don't want Juan making the adjustments in the third quarter against Bill Belichick, but... You know, it looks like that ship has pretty much sailed. I think they are going to, you know, they are going to have a lot of stability. I think they'll make some additions at linebacker, maybe at safety yet again, and, you know, cross their fingers, trade Asante Samuel for something, and I think you'll see pretty much the same defense on the field with those exceptions.
Well, Les, it's getting late early down in Mobile, I'm sure. Where are you eating dinner tonight?
Well, I don't know. There's a bunch of it's a late afternoon practice, so you know I've got writing to do. There's a bunch of seafood places. There's a little causeway, I guess, across Mobile Bay. And there's a bunch of some of them are tourist traps, some of them are good. You know, a bunch of seafood spots. So I'll probably hit one of those. It's not a bad place, really.
Is everybody rolling tide down there?
Oh yeah, God! 2 years ago at this practice, that Monday practice. They have on Monday for some reason they have instead of going to the main stadium for both practices, the South team always practices at this high school on the side of the bay that I'm staying on, the far side from Mobile. And 2 years ago, Nick Saban was there to watch Tim Tebow, and it was lepers were rolling out to be healed. And oh my God, a madhouse. It was, I've never seen anything like it. It was chaos.
Did they go out for a walk? Did they go out for a walk on the water after practice?
Yeah. Today you probably could walk on there. There's going to be a lot of water. So, but yeah, this is a big deal here. Especially the SEC guys are a big deal in this area. You know, they're gods down here, and it's an interesting, it's a weird, I don't know if either of you have ever been to this, but it's just a weird kind of, out-of-work coaches wandering around hotel lobbies and people selling nutritional supplements and agents and, I went over to get my credential at the main headquarters hotel, and I bumped into Eddie Kayat, former Eagles defensive lineman and coach,
mm-hmm.
who, does some work with, defensive linemen and stuff like that. And he's with Harold Jackson, the former Eagles wide receiver. It turns out that they became, even though they did not play in the same era, they were like 10 years apart, that he and Harold coached on a couple of staffs together, I think Tampa Bay and maybe New Orleans, and became fast friends. And so they hang out together at the Senior Bowl, and Harold's coaching wide receivers,
Well, I was
preparing for the draft, So it's like a convention.
Yeah, I always describe the baseball winter meetings as an anime convention for baseball nerds. So I picture the Senior Bowl something like that.
It must be something like that. I've never been to the baseball winter meetings, but yeah, it's just you never know what you're going to come across.
It's a lot like it's a lot like the Republican National Convention.
Maybe. Like, I've never been to that either.
It's usually you could call it the Million White Guy March, put it that way. Anyway, Les Bowen, Daily News Football, Eagles beat writer, great guy, great insight, and I'm sure if this podcast somehow lasts longer than 1 week, we will have you back on, buddy.
That'd be wonderful.
All right, we'll talk to you.
Here.
See ya.
That was Les Bowen. Well, that was Les Bowen, and we are actually going to head back down to Mobile in a few short minutes to talk to Wes Bunting of the National Football Post. As a matter of fact, actually, let's go to Wes right now. Wes Bunting, the director of college scouting for National Football Post, does some great stuff for that website. The internet, man, the information that we can get right now is incredible. I love it. I'm a football nerd. And National Football Post is kind of ground zero for football nerds. Rich Hoffman is not a football nerd. Wes, would you describe yourself as such?
I would say, a pretty big draft nerd, a pretty big draft Nick, and just love being part of it and being able to get after it day in and day out.
All right, well, we're going to get into this really quickly because, again, this is like I love this stuff. So I'm just going to start firing some names at you. We just talked to Les Bowen, our Eagles beat writer. He thinks there's a decent chance that the Eagles look quarterback on day one. What do you think about that? And who are some guys on your radar that you think might be? They have two picks in the second round. Let's say there's a guy they value highly who is there with one of those two picks. Who might one of those guys be?
Well, Well, I think the first guy you can look at, and it's an awful shame that Ryan Tannehill, the Texas A&M standout, broke his foot during training. He's unable to compete this week at the Senior Bowl. But this is a former high school quarterback turned wide receiver, and in 2.5 years at Texas A&M, he's number 3 all-time in receptions at a program that's produced some pretty talented wide receivers. Gerard Johnson then, halfway through his junior year, struggled. Tannehill took over, and he's really matured into a pretty nice quarterback in just under 17 starts at the NCAA level. Now, he's struggled to decipher information at times. He's got a good feel for the offense. He's natural in the pocket, but reading defenses, he still has some struggles, and he'll throw blindly into coverage at times. However, at 6'4", he's got good speed. He can move around in the pocket, create second life, make all the throws, and I think with more development, you're looking at where can this guy be 2-3 years down the line. Honestly, I liked him a little more than Matt Barkley coming out. However, because of the injury, he could go anywhere late first into the second round range. Nick Foles is down here from Arizona. He's a talented kid who has some sneaky athleticism outside the pocket. Made some big throws this year with 2 freshman offensive tackles protecting him. That offense was really herky-jerky throughout, but he still brought a calming influence. I think he could have a good postseason. Another guy to look at in the mid to late round range, B.J. Coleman from UT Chattanooga. This is a strong 6'3", 230-pound kid that can make all the throws. Another sneaky athlete outside the pocket. Had a really good East-West Shrine game and reminds me from a talent standpoint, much like John Skelton, who came out of Fordham 2 years ago.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask you about him, B.J. Coleman. I happen to watch the Shrine game because I have no life. And, I mean, this kid, he was at Tennessee under Cutcliffe for a while, correct? And you can tell he has polish, and I mean this kid's got a cannon arm. What round would you project him going? Is he a second day guy, or do you think he's definitely a first day guy?
No, I think he goes somewhere. And I think depending on how the quarterbacks fall off the board, I say his ceiling would be third round, and I would think his floor would be in that fifth round range. And again, it depends how he works out in interviews. But there's another tall, strapping quarterback in Brock Osweiler from Arizona State, who a lot of people are talking up now as a third-round type talent who has the ability to move into that first-round range. And when I watch Osweiler and I watch Coleman, I think they're really 2 similar prospects, guys that can throw the football. They're raw. They need some development. But at the same time, where you're looking at where these guys can be down the line, there's no doubt in my mind B.J. Coleman has the skill set to start in the NFL, and I'd much rather have Coleman, say, in the fourth round than using a first or second round pick on a guy like Brock Osweiler, considering I graded those 2 guys out very similarly.
We've been talking about linebackers, and you know it seems obvious the Eagles kind of need one, but I guess my question to you is, who is the most game ready? Who is the guy who you imagine would be able to contribute right out of the box at inside linebacker?
You know, the one guy who I've really been intrigued by is Dante Hightower, the inside linebacker from Alabama. He played in their 34 front, played on the inside middle linebacker. They had another guy playing the jack. But he reminds me of that Jeremiah Trotter, that Stuart Bradley, that big physical presence that can attack downhill. He can take on blocks. I see more of a snap, more of a pop to his game than Rolando McClain, who went 12th overall, I believe, to the Raiders a couple years ago. He's limited in coverage. He doesn't have great range, but he plays quick in tight areas. And the one thing he gives you is versatility on third down as a pass rusher. He's got decent feel, decent balance when asked to drop off into coverage. He's not a guy that's going to hold his own in man-to-man, but he can play with his hand on the ground. He can be an effective blitzer from the inside. He can rush off the edge from the outside. And I think he's going to be on a lot of teams' boards because of the versatility that he can bring on third down and his ability to get you in the third down situations because he plays the run so well.
I am not sure the Eagles have, in my lifetime, drafted anybody who is limited in coverage. They're all about running. Who's the best game ready, not limited in coverage, inside linebacker? Is there a guy?
You know, when you're looking at this year's class overall, they all have some limitations. I would say Vontaze Burfict from Arizona State, when he's into it, he's the most rangy of the top-tier guys. I think he's a little better of an athlete than Luke Kuechly from Boston College, much more athletic than Hightower from Alabama. at the same time, though, he, you know, there's questions with him on the field character-wise and off the field. And when you have a linebacker who's going to make the calls at the line of scrimmage, he's going to make sure people are in the right position to make plays, calling out what fronts he wants them in. You need a guy that's mentally stable, and he's a guy that consistently has flashed big-time ability, especially as a junior, as a sophomore and as a junior this year, but at times has just lost his head. He's lost interest in the game, allowed himself to be blocked, and that's the big conundrum with him. I think if he goes to a good locker room, there's no doubt in my mind he has all-pro type potential. At the same time, if he goes to a poor locker room that doesn't have a good veteran around him, he's one of those guys that, despite his talent, could have a tough time playing at a high level.
All right, he's out too.
That's going to be Kuechly. Or let's ask you this. Do you think it's a given they go linebacker, or do you think their best player available who's not a defensive end or offensive lineman?
You know, I think there's some talented linebackers that you can find in that second, third round range as well. You know, they like undersized guys that can run. Levante David from Nebraska is an interesting kid. All he does is make tackles. He finds the football. He measured in today at around 6 foot, 6'1", 225 pounds. He's got great instincts. He can click and close quickly. He's got a good feel in coverage. I think because of his size, he could fall into that second-round range, maybe even third-round range. Travis Lewis from Oklahoma, who I thought was a potential first-round pick coming into the year, battled injuries. He's a tough kid, though, who played through pain. Again, another versatile guy that can run sideline to sideline, tackles well, can hold his own in man and zone coverage. I think he would be a nice guy who, again, might have fallen down some draft boards because of his overall limitations staying healthy this year. But when he is healthy, which he's been throughout his whole career, is a heck of a football player who made a lot of big plays in the Big 12 this past season.
You mentioned the Eagles' philosophy of smaller, faster guys. When you talk to people around the league, do they view that as a fairly conventional way to go about drafting players in 2011 and 2012, or do people think they're a little extreme in that view?
Well, I think the biggest thing is when the Eagles built this defense, not only the linebacking corps, but they were expected to play with the lead consistently. So when you play with the lead, much like the Colts did with Peyton Manning, you want guys that can run to the football and play the pass. However, much like the Colts, those undersized linebackers, when they're having to come from behind or play in close games and teams can still run the football consistently, that means they have to take on blocks at the point of attack, and they don't just get to run sideline to the football. They have to take on guards getting out to the second level. They have to play downhill. They have to stack and shed at the point of attack and try to tackle consistently. So I think when you have a team that is supposed to play with the lead but isn't able to, you know, that's what really makes these linebackers struggle at times. There's no doubt there's athleticism in that linebacking corps, but you have to let that athleticism play to a strength, and that's something the Eagles weren't able to do from an offensive standpoint this year because they were consistently playing from behind.
Getting back to the quarterbacks, I mean, no one ever knows how those things are going to unfold on draft day. I mean, we saw it last year with Ponder and Locker. I mean, guys fall in love with certain guys, and they make aggressive plays for them. Tannehill, do you think it's possible that he is there in the second round? He just strikes me as a guy that somebody is going to fall in love with, especially when you look at some of those teams that could be drafting down in that lower third. The Ravens, the Niners, the Broncos even. Who knows what those teams are looking at with regards to their the future of their quarterback position. I don't know that the Ravens would want to put that pressure on Flacco, but if they fall in love with a guy like Tannehill, I mean, is it out of the question that he goes there?
No, I think it's unlikely that he falls outside the first round, but at the same time, you look at the injury. He's not going to be able to run at the combine. All he'll be able to do is interview. You have Nick Foles down here who potentially could leapfrog him with a strong senior bowl. Brock Osweiler at Arizona State, who's going to throw the football extremely well against air at the combine. He's 6'8". He's a sneaky athlete that can move around in the pocket. You know, he could move up ahead of Tannehill. Do I think those two guys are better quarterbacks than Tannehill? Absolutely not. But we know that there's been a ton of quarterbacks to come through that can trick the system with unique and talented workouts, and that's what both of those guys could be able to do. So I wouldn't be surprised if he fell in the second round, but I just think when you watch the tape of where Tannehill is after only 1.5 years playing quarterback at the college level, there's just far too much upside for a kid that's 6'4", 220 that can run around and make throws both inside and outside the pocket. Now, I have a hard time believing that he would fall outside the first round.
And then to follow up on Rich's question, we talked to Les Bowen, you know, 10 or 15 minutes ago, and he mentioned that he thinks that the Eagles are still going to make some sort of personnel move with regards to their defense. Castillo's probably coming back, but he wouldn't be surprised if they, you know, talk to someone on one of the recently eliminated playoff teams to join the staff as an assistant of some sort. You look at the team defense statistics, Pittsburgh, Houston, Baltimore, San Francisco, 3-4, 3-4, 3-4, 3-4. You mentioned the Alabama linebacker who seems like he would be a fit coming off the edge. Is there a movement underway in the NFL to get away from this, you know, blitzing 4-3 type scheme or the Tampa 2 type scheme and move more towards the 3-4? Are you seeing that amongst evaluators and executives that you talk to?
Well, no, I wouldn't say that as a whole teams are looking, oh, we got to have these 3-4 guys. I would say, I think right now it's almost right around 50-50 teams that play 4-3 and 34. But when you look at the conference playoffs as a whole, all those teams have in common is that they're physical in the front seven. The Giants play with four down, three linebackers. Mm-hmm. They're extremely physical in the front seven. The Niners play a 34, but they're extremely physical in the front seven. I think teams are looking for explosive, physical athletes. They're not looking for undersized finesse guys, but physical guys that can be explosive at the point of attack, that can win their individual matchups and get after the football. Because if you have guys that can't hold the point of attack and that need to win off the line consistently, you know, that's good for big plays time and time again, but at the same time, you're going to struggle to consistently anchor and beat blocks and force running backs and wide receivers, you know, to adjust their routes and make plays on the football. So you want big physical guys up front. I think that's the new age that we're looking at in the NFL. These undersized cover two guys, they're kind of falling by the wayside.
You just described everything the Eagles are not. but before we let you go, let me ask you this. You are in the Eagles draft room, war room on draft day. A, how do you think it should unfold on day one? And B, how do you think, knowing the Eagles, it will unfold on day one?
Well, I think, you know, you look at the history, and consistently in the first round, they've gone offensive line or defensive line, and I wouldn't be shocked at all, especially when you look over this linebacker class and the value you can get if they would go one of the top offensive linemen. There's a lot of talented interior players this year, some versatile players that can play tackle and guard. Kalichio Smelly from Iowa State, Cordy Glenn from Georgia make a lot of sense. Or they look at one of these talented defensive linemen that add some beef up front that can overwhelm on contact, a Quentin Copels from North Carolina, who's got some scheme versatility, a Devin Still from Penn State who can play inside, who can anchor versus the run, push the pocket versus the pass. I much more favor building from the inside out, you know, giving some talent to those linebackers inside and then addressing that need later and allowing them to play more to their strengths, to be honest.
Wow. You realize you just predicted the destruction of the city of Philadelphia on the last weekend in April, correct?
Well, you know, I'm trying to win football games. You win from the inside out. That's the way I see it.
No, I'm with you. Hey, Wes, I really appreciate it. I hope we'll be able to check back in with you closer to the combine and talk more about this stuff because, you know, who knows what's going to happen between then and now.
Not a problem. Love to be on.
Awesome, man. All right, well, enjoy Alabama.
I appreciate it. Take care, guys.
All right. That was Wes Bunting, the director of college football scouting. Rich Hoffman is currently asleep right now.
I'm not. I'm just, we got like five listeners, and he and all five of them just committed suicide after he said they were going to take a lineman. So we're just talking to each other at this point.
Yeah. It's the thing about draft day is very few of these guys at any position are going to be ready to help this team next year. And that's the fascinating thing right about the position the Eagles are in, because even a guy like Avantez Perfect or some of the guys you rattled off there, there's going to be a learning curve. And I'm not sure that the Eagles can afford to have one given their schematic challenges.
I can't believe they're going to let a rookie call signals. I just can't believe it.
Yeah.
And
what would you think about this? London Fletcher is a guy who's a free agent this year. He
has not won a Super Bowl,
and Brian Roll might be bigger than him too. So.
Yeah, but what if you know you drafted a guy like Perfect, and brought in a veteran like I mean Fletcher's also I think he was in Jamie Moyer's yearbook, high school yearbook.
Another undersized guy though, huh?
Yeah, but I mean I think size is not. I like Brian Roll.
I do too.
Not necessarily as a starter. Then the best linebacker on a championship defense, but I don't think size necessarily. I don't think size is necessarily an indication of physicality. Let's look at Brandon Jacobs.
Okay,
this guy
right
might be the worst short yardage runner in the history of the NFL on a pound for pound basis. my buddy's a Giants fan.
He's got that high pad level, Dave. Yeah. You know,
how many scouting terms did you get? Rich and I are both legally drunk right now because we're actually playing a drinking game where every time a scouting term was used, we took a shot. Do you think they have the temerity,
the cojones, to draft another offensive lineman or defensive lineman in the first round, knowing what the reaction will be? I mean, at some point, you have to take into consideration the fact that you need to convince people to come to the games.
I disagree with you on that because there's no indication that people are not coming. So,
well, I will say this. Jeffrey Lurie clearly was on a PR mission.
Absolutely.
It's clearly creeping into their consciousness, at least, isn't it?
Sure.
But you don't think that would have left – you don't think that would – if they love David DeCastro, an offensive guard from another undersized guy from Stanford, you don't think that would prevent them from – I just feel like they have so many other needs, you know?
Yeah, well, I would go with a kid at backup running back, probably. To me, that's one of the real keys to the season. Is you need Shady to be really good, but not dead.
Right.
You know, and I think it's really, really important that they get somebody they can trust to be the backup.
And frankly, I like Shady McCoy. I think he's one of the top playmakers in the league, but he has some weaknesses, and I'm not sure that he's a guy that can get you the hard 2 yards on third and two between the tackles. Is he?
I think he's better at it than he was, but he's still not good enough at it.
And I don't think there's any shame in having to bring in a guy who can do that. The problem is they brought in Ronnie Brown,
right,
who anybody who watched him over the last 3 years could tell you that he was not that guy.
Even I knew that.
Yeah. Obviously he brought a lot to the table with his ability with a run pass option and the short yardage situation. So we can't discount that. But running back, I would never draft a running back on day one unless it was Adrian Peterson or
I agree with you. Probably.
I wouldn't say no.
Maybe the third pick.
It would have to be a very special talent for me to use one of my first two or three picks on a running back.
I do not see a rookie linebacker having the kind of impact in a year that Andy has to win. And I mentioned this the last, and I really think the undercurrent in the building right now is
NovaCare you're talking about.
Yes, is err on the side of stability.
Yeah,
and take a shot. I think it'll be Andy's call ultimately, but I kind of think that's where he's at right now.
What is the feeling in the building on the interior of that offensive line? Do they like Evan Mathis? Do they like the center, the Kelsey kid? What do they think about the way Danny Watkins acquitted himself?
I think they like Kelsey a lot. I think they think Evan Mathis, what is an above average good player. I think Danny Watkins is, I'm going to acknowledge, for me, it's impossible to evaluate guards. It's really hard.
Yeah.
But people with better eyes than I have think he's ordinary right now.
They need a road grader.
Well, that's really not what they want, though.
They need to want something else, then.
Well, what do you make of Harriman's?
I think he had a solid year at right tackle. I don't think he had the year that a lot. I heard somebody say that they thought he was perhaps the MVP of the offensive line. Should have gotten some Pro Bowl consideration.
Well, I don't know about that. But
I just don't know that he got beat more than people think. I think in the passing game.
I think he was fine.
He's fine.
Yeah,
fine doesn't win championships.
Well. The Giants in the Super Bowl, and they couldn't block anybody for about an hour yesterday.
Yeah.
And it's about the quarterback. I mean, you know, we can talk about this forever. He's got to figure it out. You know, Les is right. There are days when you talk to him where you don't know if he did, and you don't know if he's gonna. But he has to be a low turnover guy next year, and he has to be willing to play that way. And that's it. That's the whole thing. And I think if Marty were to leave, Marty Morningweg, that would be a big issue for them.
Yeah. Did any names jump out at you when Les was talking about? I mean,
he's right. Brad Childress would be the guy that would bring in a second. But the problem is,
no, I'm talking about. Defensively, wasn't he talking defensively? Less.
Yeah, he suggested there has to be another shoe to drop just because he feels like there has to be another shoe to drop. I'm not sure there is. I mean, they have to hire a secondary coach. They right. do have to do that.
And then Greg Jackson, is it? There's an assistant secondary coach in San Francisco that would make some sense, and that could be the type of guy he's referring to. That's not really a shoe dropping, is it?
I don't think so. I mean, I think when Spagnuolo took that job, that was the shoe.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing's happening, I don't think. I can't believe, you know, Les suggested you could just invent a title and steal him from another team and call it a promotion.
But why would that guy want that?
That's, first of all, that's not really true.
I mean,
you can stop a position coach from applying for a coordinator job, as we know, because Andy stopped Steve Spagnuolo from doing it a couple of years ago.
Which
might have played into the whole thing, right. I still don't know if they wanted Spagnuolo.
Yeah.
I mean, I still don't know, honestly, if Juan Castillo's headset even works, if it's plugged into anything. I don't know what's going on over there.
He's got the Joe Paterno headset. It actually has elevator music.
And none of us really does know, understand. I mean, Juan might be a genius, and it might have just taken a month. I don't know.
Yeah.
And there's about five people who do, and they all work, you know, down in South Philadelphia. And I do not believe Andy is so loyal to Juan Castillo that he would be committing suicide.
Yeah.
If it was that bad, there are ways to, you know, I think if Juan was no good, they'd have a guy in here.
All I know is that once nuclear holocaust comes, the two remaining species will be cockroaches and Juan Castillo. Because that guy takes surviving to a new level. Let me, before we wrap this up, we obviously went heavy on the Eagles today. Partly because we're going to be going so heavy on the Phillies over these next
right.
couple months. But which team do you think has more pressure on it heading into this season? And obviously, heads are not going to roll at Citizens Bank Park if the Phillies do not win a World Series next year. I mean, Ed Wade... It took Ed Wade 8 years.
Little head?
And Ed Wade was here for 8 years before he got fired and what do they win, 86 games?
How big was Ed Wade's peril?
Yeah. I don't know. Well, do you really think any heads could roll? Whose head would roll? Charlie's?
Well, I mean, I think somebody from the outfield staff. I mean, if they come out of the chute and it's June 30th and they're not looking very good, there's a lot of money invested there.
Yeah, and I mean, the other thing... It's such a gate-driven. Now that's not as big a thing this year, I think, because of the season tickets obviously have already gone out. But you need that walk-up crowd, and in this city, I don't think it's going to take this city very long to get over the Phillies. At least going to see them in person, if this team is 10 games out of it, you know, in August. Do you? Everyone says it's a baseball town, but I don't buy that.
I mean, I think the park is fun, and I think that. I think people will hang with them longer than they might have otherwise because the park is fun. They're not staying forever.
Right. That being said, is there any way this team doesn't win the NL East next year?
Sure.
How? I agree with you, but...
You get the closer hurt, and you get one of the starters hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
I think it's just a matter of you get one of the starters hurt. I mean,
right.
It's like... Cliff Lee goes down with a shoulder.
Right.
Where are they at?
I mean, it's not like the law of averages wouldn't suggest that that's a real possibility.
They have been, as unhealthy as they have been everywhere else,
right.
They have been remarkably fortunate with the health of Roy Halladay,
right.
Cole Hamels, and last year Cliff Lee. I mean,
when's Ryan Howard coming back? We don't know.
Uh-huh.
you know, I mean, if I had a guess, it's like, you know, last week in May, something like that. I think that's probably the upside.
Yeah, I mean, you got to keep in mind with Ryan Howard, we're talking offensive lineman timetable pretty right. much, and foot injuries.
Right.
With I offensive agree. Linemen, knee injuries.
I agree.
Stacey Andrews.
Don't go there. Come on.
We're just going to depress people on this podcast.
All right, stop. This needs to be all right,
let's go on. Let's go out on an upbeat note.
All right.
What are you most excited about with regards to Philadelphia sports? The Sixers? The Union? Temple basketball?
I would say I kind of like the Sixers.
Yeah.
I kind of, you know, they're the Eagles are, in my life, exhausting.
Mm.
You know, everything about them just wears you out, you know?
It's like a girlfriend. It's like the Eagles require an emotional investment that you just should not have to give with regards to sports.
You know, and the Phillies are the ultimate, you know, all right, I'll see you in 6 months right. at this point. And the Sixers are none of that. They're just kind of young and they're just kind of fun and they're easy to deal with as a reporter. And, you know, the coach writes stories for you. You know, coach has written more stories than Andy Reid's written in 15 years. And he's done it in a year. They're fun. The building is getting better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's really a lot to like about them. And
I've found myself watching games.
Yeah.
Which I couldn't, I probably watched zero Sixers games last year and zero the year before that.
It's just there's a newness to it. There's a lack of expectation to it, and it's just kind of fun.
Yeah.
And the Eagles have not been just kind of fun in like 10 years.
Since Don McNabb was crossing over somebody at FedEx Field and doing Michael Jackson.
I mean, they have not been fun. I wrote a thing last week about the last time they were really unequivocally fun was when they lost that championship game in St. Louis. I mean, leading up to that, it was all, you know, you could just see forever into the future, and it was all good. And that was 10 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And it hasn't been the same since.
Well, yeah. And I think that's people's big frustration with this Eagles team, talking to them. They're just not likable. You used to have guys,
football players.
Right.
You used to have Jeremiah Trotter. You used to have Hugh Douglas separating Jim Miller's shoulder.
Right.
You used to have Brian Dawkins, Troy Vincent, you know, later on Sheldon Brown. You just don't have guys who, like, who is the fan favorite? LeSean McCoy.
Right.
Beyond that, who is the football player that guys like?
Well, I mean, there's a Deshaun population.
Yeah. But
there's a Vic population. But again, there's also there's an anti-Deshaun population.
Right.
There's an anti-Vic population. There and defensively.
I mean, how many Brian Roll jerseys do you see? How many Jamar?
You know, there are people who like Babin a lot, and there are other people who think, you know, we at least tackle somebody occasionally.
He's like a sports car where they used to have like, this is a football town. I mean, people grew up. My buddy Fran down in Tampa grew up going to Franklin Field with his dad, watching Chuck Benarek murder people.
Mm-hmm.
Chuck Benarek would have been suspended for 2 years under the current NFL administration, but those are the type of players that this town loves. And I look up and down that Eagles roster, and I just don't see it. And that's why this draft is a very curious one for me, because as you heard Wes, as you heard Les, as you heard us, I mean, they love the sports cars, you know.
Yeah.
And do they begin to change that identity, or do they? Is next year just a rebuilding year? Can they rebuild the identity of this team on the fly? Do they think it needs to be rebuilt on the fly, or is it just going to have to crash and burn and until someone else comes in?
C, A, B, C, C.
C. this
is all about this year.
Well, guys, you can forward your shrink bills to 400 North Broad Street for the foreseeable future, at least until we move to 9th and Market. We'll be back next week. Dave Murphy. I'm not sure Rich will. He's probably never going to speak to me again after dragging him into this. But you've just witnessed history, for better or for worse. The first ever Sports Week podcast. Check out the Daily News Monday through Friday. Check out Sports Week on Saturday. It's on newsstands. You might have to dig a little bit if you're at the Wawa on Belmont Avenue in Manayunk. But it's worth your while. Zach Berman's doing some great stuff for the magazine. Wes has got some great analysis in there, and of course Rich Hoffman, the dean, the dean of Philadelphia sports writers. Are you the dean at this point?
Boy, there's a chance.
Wow. Well, I am not the dean, and probably never will be. But thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you here next week on Philly.com, the Daily News Sports Week, and the Inquirer.